Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Me'ilah is daf Yud Aleph. Starting the third parak of Me'ilah this morning. The first two parakim of Me'ilah dealt with Me'ilah vis-a-vis Karban. Okay, as I told you, one of the most basic rules that we talk about when we're establishing the penalty of Me'ilah by Karban is that it has to qualify under the category of Kodesh Hashem. It has to go up onto the Mizbeach. A Karban that's not going up on the Mizbeach is not does not subject to the penalty of Me'ilah. That's only for anything that is designated to go up on Me'ilah. So we've been discussing that over the course of the first two parakim of Me'ilah, an Ola, a Chatas, an Asham. So they're Kodesh Hashem. They're primarily designated to go up onto the Mizbeach. And so there's going to be an Isra of Me'ilah on these animals the moment that you're Makdish the animals. By a Chatas and Asham after Zrikas Adam, so the Isra of Me'ilah, the penalty of Me'ilah, is going to be lifted from the meat of the animal, but the remaining part of the animal is going to be still subject to Me'ilah until it's burnt and reduced to ashes. And by Ola, it's going to continue to have an Isra of Me'ilah even after Zrikas Adam, because the entire animal is going up onto the Mizbeach. And so therefore, the penalty of Me'ilah will continue until the animal is burnt on the top of the Mizbeach and reduced to ashes, and then either Trumas Adeshin or Tzas Adeshin, as we've been discussing for the past couple of days. By Shlamim, it's just the opposite. The animal is not primarily Kodesh Hashem, so therefore the animal is not subject to the Me'ilah. Even when you're Makdish the animal, the animal is just simply not subject to Me'ilah. And the only time that there's going to be Me'ilah is only after Zrikas Adam, and it's only on the Imurim, only on the parts that are going to go up onto the top of the Mizbeach. Okay, that's the basics, and we've been discussing that now over the course of the first two parakim. We start now the third parak of Me'ilah. Again, it's short. This one is going to take us four blot, which in Daf Yomi language is 4 days to get through. And this going to continue the discussion of Me'ilah vis-a-vis Karban, and we're going to talk about Karbanos, which are various scenarios amongst Karbanos. You'll see. Okay, we start the first Mishnah. Now, this first Mishnah over here is a repeat Mishnah that we've seen already back in Temura. Around the Chav Beis area in Temura. Vlad Chatas, Temura's Chatas, V'chatas Shemesu Bala, Yamusu. Okay, here we go. The Mishnah here talks about Chatas that need to die. So the first three cases, you know there's 5 in total. We talked about this at length in Temura. We're going to talk about this not at length here in Me'ilah. There are 3 carbon Chatas that unequivocally need to die. Now when we say Chatas Shemesu, you remember, this is Halach L'Moshe Mi'Sinai. You're not going to find any of this discussion in Chumash itself. It's just simply part of the oral tradition that we receive from Moshe, that under 5 circumstances, a chatas which is no longer needed is now going to have to expire. Now, I say expire, I'm being nice. You understand that the animal is now left in a pen, and essentially it's left to die. They can't do anything with it because, unlike other karbanos where I don't need the carbon anymore, so I'm just simply going to redeem it. But over here, a chatas has a very specific purpose. The purpose is to achieve a kapara for its owner. And for reasons which we're going to go through, the owner does not need the kapara anymore. And so therefore, what are we left to do? In other words, you have a karban that is earmarked for a very specific purpose. I can't let it graze and develop a blemish because halacha Moshe Mi'Sinai, and just from a logical standpoint, you hear it, it makes a little bit of sense, in that because it had a very specific purpose to it, and I don't need it anymore, so therefore you just simply leave it to die. So the examples go like this. Number one, Vlad Chatas means I set aside a carbon chatas for my Avera, and the carbon chatas got pregnant, because the chatas, remember, is a female. And it got pregnant, and it had a baby. So now the baby that comes out, now usually we talk about the babies of a carbon, the derivative of a carbon is carbon, generally speaking. If a shlamim had a baby, the baby would just simply be a shlamim. You offer the mother, you offer the baby as well as a carbon. Over here, the baby that comes out of the mother has kedushas carbon as well, but the kedushas carbon that it has is kedushas carbon chatas. Now here's the problem. You already are going to achieve your kapara through the mother. What are you going to do with the baby? Chatas amesa. Case number 2 is tmura chatas. Tmura chatas. I tried to exchange the kedusha from one carbon chatas to another carbon chatas. We spent a masechta talking about this. The Ayahu is Marasiya Kodesh. Both it and its exchange are going to both have Kedusha. So now the second animal is going to also have Kedusha's carbon chatas. Again, it has to be left to die. And Chatas Shemesu Bala, and finally the third case, where the owner himself or herself died before actually bringing the carbon chatas there as well. Now we already have a kapara for the owner because the owner died and the death serves as a kapara already for the owner. So now that animal is no longer needed. That animal is going to be left to die as well. So you already see in the Mishnah, just the structure of the Mishnah, we went over this back in Temura, it's worthwhile going over again, that the Mishnah divides and sets up the first three by itself, Vlad Chatzis, Temura Chatzis, Chatzis Shemeis Ba'aleha, Yamusu, okay? And now we're going to go to the next two cases. The next two cases are slightly more complicated. We spent some time in the Gemara and Temura trying to understand these next two cases. We're going to touch on it very quickly over here. Ushe Ivrash Nasa Vishavda Vinimsas Balas Mom. So if it is over a year old, if it is lost, and it turns out to be a Baal Mom. Now, how do you read this Mishnah? So it's complex, and the Gemara and Temura had a lengthy discussion about it. You remember Reish Lakish's reading of our Mishnah, he read that this next section of the Mishnah, when you read the word Sha'avda, you almost like read it twice. You read the word Sha'avda twice, and the Mishnah reads like this. If Rosh Nasa Vishavda, or Ve'avda, right, it is over a year old and you lost it, or Sha'avda Ve'nimtzes Balas Mom, or you lost it, and then it turns out, when you find it, it turns out to be a Balas Mom. Okay, that's how Reish Lakish reads our Mishnah back in Temura. The Gemara over here doesn't really make mention of any of this because our Gemara over here is really just focused on one aspect of all this, which is the din of Me'ila. Okay, so we're not going to get too involved in any of this, but anyway, that's the way Reish Lakish read the Mishnah. And basically the Mishnah is talking about now where I lost the animal and I replaced it. And there was a double whammy. There were two issues, meaning number one, I lost the animal, that's avuda. And then when finding the lost animal, it was disqualified. Either it was over a year old, or when I found that it was blemished, imishikibra balim, if the owners received a kapara through the second animal, the replacement animal, and now all I'm left is with this animal over here. So here's now what I have. I have an animal that has no purpose. It's a carbon with no purpose. Tamus, so the animal now is left to die. Again, it's one of the chatos amesos. Ve'eino osa tamura, and it cannot affect a tamura because it does not have any longer kedushas carbon. Velo nenin velo moalin, and you can't get benefit from it because at one point in time it was a carbon. Right, Rashi writes Lonen, and you see the last Rashi on the Amud. Mehem lechatchila ho ukedushin havu v'imnen and ein moalan behem. The way Rashi reads these four words, you shouldn't get hana from it. Meaning, ask a Rav, can I get benefit from this animal? He's going to tell you no. Of course not. And once upon a time, it was a carbon, so you cannot get benefit from it. What if you did get benefit from it? You didn't violate the Isser of Me'ila. Why not? It's not Kachay Hashem. Because now that the animal is designated to die, now it's not going to go on the Mizbech, so therefore it's not Kachay Hashem. So Lo Nen, the way Rashi reads it, you shouldn't get Hana from it, but if you do, Lo Mo'alan, you didn't violate the Isser of Me'ila. Now Rashi over here writes, this consistently throughout the Masechta. When it says Lo Mo'alan, it means Midaraisa. Look at that last Rashi again. V'im Nenin Ein Mo'alan Mehen Midaraisa Midarabanan V'ena Mashalan El Karen Bavad. Rashi says that if you do get benefit from a chatos amesa, so you don't have to pay chomesh, you don't have to bring a karban asham, but you do have to make restitution because there is me'ila midrabanan, and as we talked about from day one of the mesechta, me'ila midrabanan does require you to make full restitution of that which you took.
Why do we say
You could say that, but we have a halacha Moshe Messina. I mean, it has to be left to die. So the imach shelo kibra ba'alim. Now, what if the owner has not received a kapara? Now, in other words, both animals are looking at you, and you have now option of which one to turn to. So tirachi tisayv. Now, since you didn't already receive a kapara, now what you can do is you can allow the animal to graze, develop a blemish, v'timaker, and you can sell the animal, and you can purchase for yourself another animal. So in other words, it's not always, in the case of avuda, in the case of lost, it's not always going to be a chatzas amesa. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. It depends whether or not you found it pre or post kapara. So the Mishnah says that exactly that. In other words, it depends. It depends exactly when you found it. Now, Under these circumstances, where the lost animal that was found before I received the kapara through another animal, now this animal can affect tamura because it still has kedushas karban and therefore can affect it can affect another animal as a tamura umal and bone. Obviously, now that it still has the status of karban and it still has the status of kachay Hashem, therefore it's subject to the din of me'ila. Okay, that's the Mishnah. I did a very short version of the Mishnah. I did a very simple version of the Mishnah. Back in Temura, on Daf Chav Beis, we did a much more expansive discussion on the Mishnah. The Gemara only makes two very short points, and the Gemara says like this, Mishnah Resha, Deloka Miflagi, Mishnah Sefer Deka Miflagi. Yeah, why are we breaking up into three and two? Why is the Mishnah talking about the five Chataos and Mesos? The structure of the Mishnah is, let me introduce you to the first three, and then I'm going to introduce you to the next two. So the Gemara says very simply, Resha Psikale, Sefalo Psikale. So it's very simple, because in the first three cases, it is absolute. Meaning any time that a Chatzas has a baby, the baby has to die. Done. End of discussion. Any time that a Chatzas makes a Temura, the Temura has to die. Okay, enough. Meaning that's it. And the same thing is true with the Chatzas Shemesu Ba'alah. So they're absolute halachas, with no qualification. But when you get to the cases of avuda, right, your lost chata, so now there are going to be qualifications. It depends if you find the lost one before you had the kapara, after you had the kapara, and so therefore we can't lump the avuda cases together with the first three cases. Okay. Now, hatana legabit tamura, hatana legabit tamura. So the Gemara now asks the question, the Gemara and Tamura asks the same identical question, which is, we learned this Mishnah already. In fact, the Masechta Tamura, word for word, this Mishnah in the Mishnah Tamura identical. And so why would Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi do that? Why would he repeat an entire Mishnah? Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who was known for consolidating his words, right? La'olam Yishana Adam B'derech Ktsara. When you teach things, make sure to be as succinct as possible. I'm still learning. So the... be patient. So the be succinct. So why would he repeat an entire Mishnah? So the Gemara's answer is Tani Hacha Mishum Tamura, Tani Hacha Mishum Mi'ila. Okay, good. So there are two different perspectives. When we're learning Masechta Tamura, we're interested in Tamura. So therefore, we are interested in the Tamura aspect of this halacha. But now we're here learning Mi'ila. We're halfway through Mi'ila. We are interested in the Mi'ila perspective of the Karban Chatzas Chatzas Shemesu Ba'alah. Okay, straightforward. The first sugya in the third parak of Me'ila just simply tells us that once the chatas is designated to die because of the five scenarios of chatas amesa, so there's no longer going to be a din of Me'ila. According to Rashi, which we read, there's not going to be a din of Me'ila midaraisa, but there still will be a din of Me'ila midarabana. Not all Rishonim agree with Rashi. You can look at the Tosafot on the bottom of the previous Amud, he disagrees, but in the meantime, we continue. Hamafrish ma'os l'nazira so. Okay. You want to be a nazir. Okay. So you take on your naziros, which means that when you get to the end of your naziros, you want to conclude your naziros, you have to bring karbanos. Three karbanos to be specific. An ola, a shlamim, and a chatas. Okay, why does a nazir need to bring a chatas? This is, a conversation we've had many times. Okay, should he become a nazir? Should he not become a nazir? The classic discussion. The Mefarshim and Chumash talk about this. Rashi and the Ramban talk about it. Right, living an ascetic life, is it warranted? Okay, some say he shouldn't have done it. Okay, anyway, but right now, we're interested in the Gemara and the Halacha, the Hashkaf. We're interested in Hashkaf also, just not now. So so you need to set aside money for these karbanos. I mean, you don't need to set aside money because you simply buy the karbanos. But if you set aside money for these karbanos, you know that this money now is going to be specifically for three karbanos, an ola, a shlamim, and a chatas. So now we're going to focus on the money. Money set aside for these three karbanos. Now, here, let me read the Mishnah and we'll explain. Lo nenin v'lo mo'ala. Now, should I get benefit from the money? Absolutely not. Meaning, of course not. Money set aside for a karban, so you shouldn't use. In other words, the scenario I painted the other day where I reach into the piggy bank that I see, the piggy bank that I set aside for my nazir money, and I run out to the barber and I get a haircut with that money. So, of course, I question, can I do that? Of course not. Lo nenin. However, lo mo'ala. Here's an interesting one. There, if you do take the money, and you misappropriate, you use the money for yourself, you didn't violate the Isser of Me'ila.
What's it all combined together?
Just wait. Just wait. We're gonna give me a moment. Mimnei shehein ruuyin lavo kulan shlamim, because it can all go towards the shlamim. Meaning, you didn't specify which money's going to go to which. You just simply pooled money together and said, here, this is going to be from my naziris. I know there are three karbanos in store, and I know I need to take this money and divide and use it for chatas olon shlamim, but right now, I'm just putting this money aside. These are what's called stumen. It's money that's non-specified. It's just simply a pool of money for my karbanos. Of those three karbanos, one of them is going to be a shlamim. As we've already established through the first two prakim of Me'ilah, there is no penalty of Me'ilah for misappropriating a shlamim. Yes, after Zrikas Adam, there'll be Me'ilah on the Imurim. Right. But as I explained already a couple of times, but fundamentally the animal is not subject to Me'ilah. So therefore, the money that's earmarked towards shlamim is therefore not going to be subject to Me'ilah. So here's an interesting one. I have, right, I have other monies pooled together with this money. Now the other monies are going to go towards an Ola, towards the chatas, those are kachim kachim. We know that there's an isser of me'ilah on those karbanos, and consequently, there are monies for those karbanos. And meanwhile, because I have a pool of money together, and because it's unspecified, and because some of that money is going to go towards the shlamim, so therefore, if I benefit from that money, which of course I shouldn't do, the Mishnah in no way is condoning it, but if I do, I don't violate the isser of me'ilah.
Is there any particular reason why, using the example of a nazir, could it just be an individual who wants to wants to do all this for himself?
Right.
He pulls the money together.
Correct. But the nazir is just a nice way to package this idea. Meaning, you're right. In concept, we could have expressed this other ways as well. It's just a nazir is a good way to express it. Now, I'm going to share with you an interesting Rashi. Rashi writes like this: Mimnei shein ruuyin lahavi bekulan shlamim. Rashi on this Mishnah makes the following comment: Klomer de bechol mane umane. Matzina lameimar zehir for shlashlamim v'shlamim kachim kalem ninu ve'ein behem me'ila kidnan beperek kama. Okay, so Rashi goes back to the first parak of me'ila and he points out that there's no me'ila by shlamim. But I want to focus on those first words of Rashi. Klamar debechol mane umane matzina lameimar zehir for shlashlamim. When you pick up a coin, you could say, well, in theory, this coin could have been used for my shlamim. And so therefore, when I take this coin out of that pool of money, and I use it for whatever use I want, my own personal needs, and I misappropriate it because I could have used this coin for shlamim, so therefore I didn't violate the Isser of Me'ilah.
Is there ever a point where you get beyond?
Yeah, so in other words, right. So a careful reading of Rashi may lead you to the following conclusion. What if I don't take one coin? What if I take all the coins? And I misappropriate all the coins. So,
because you didn't specify, you're going to say, this is for this coin, that for this, this and for that. If you specify the coin,
I understand. I'm going to agree with you, but I'm not sure if that's what Rashi's saying. I don't know. I agree with your premise. I'm going to show you Tosfos in a moment, who is also going to agree, or let's say better, we're going to agree with Tosfos, but. I agree with the premise, but I don't think that's what Rashi's saying. Meaning Rashi writes, Klamar debechol mane umane, with each and every coin.
Right.
It sounds like from Rashi that on a case by case basis, or in this case, on a coin by coin basis, I could say this one's gonna go to Shlomim. But if I take all the coins together, I no longer have that ability. I can't say, well, all these coins are going to go to Shlamim, because I know that's not factually correct. Some of these coins are going to go to Shlamim, and some of them are going to go to an Ola, and to a Chatas. So you could read Rashi, and you could say that had I taken all the coins, well, by the way, he talks about it. Yeah, it's okay. Right, correct. And if you look at... and if you look at Tosos, Hamafish Maslan Azira Solon and Velo Maolan, Mimne Shahin Ruin Lavo, Kulan Shlamim, the Kevin Delapirishim Yirza Yavikola Mosl Shlamim, the Kachim Kalan Lets Bumila. The way Tosos sounds, like even if I took all the money, since what I could do is I could look, I have this big pool of money. My original expectation was I was going to buy all three karbanos from this pool of money. But I say to myself, you know what? I'd like a huge shlamim. So I'm going to take all this money and I'm going to apply it to a shlamim. You could do that. Obviously, then you're going to have to go into your pocket. You're going to have to take out more money for your olam, for your chatas. But the way Tosfos sets it up, since all this money could be used towards Yerushalayim, so therefore, even if I took all of it, I'd be chayev a, I wouldn't be violating the Isser of Me'ilah.
So under this,
according to Tosfos, you would never be in the position of Me'ilah.
The Mishnah talks about no lo ne'enes, so what's the penalty for if you do that?
There's no penalty, meaning lo ne'enes is just telling you that you shouldn't.
You shouldn't.
But if you did, there's no punishment.
But if you did, then there's no, you're not under the penalty.
That you never specified the money. You just, for kavod as you didn't say
correct. No, but it,
so it could be that he wasn't just shlomim with it.
Right, that's Tosus' explanation, for sure.
Yeah.
Correct, but I'm saying you could read Rashi differently. Okay, and again, I'm not breaking any uncharted waters over here, but that's, you know, you read Rashi, it could go like that. Now, back to the Mishnah. And Ben, this is another reason why the Mishnah chose this particular scenario, because there's going to be halachas here that you don't have by other designated monies. Okay. So, mace. Now, what if, Rachman al-Salam, God forbid, this person set aside money to conclude his Nazirus, and unfortunately, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated, he didn't make it to the end. He did not get to the end of his Nazirus. So, when he died, he left, as part of his estate, monies set aside for Karban Nazir. Now, what do you do with that money? Now, in other words, you can't just simply take that money. That money belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, and more specifically, to the Mizbeach. Now, you have to realize that of that money, some of that money was earmarked towards the Karban Chatas. Okay. So here's an interesting halacha. If they were stumim, which means that he didn't specify which money was going to which Karban, so now what we're able to do is that we're able to look at this entire pool of money and say, it's not. We don't have to look at its individual components right. Of Chata, Shlamim, and Ola. We could just simply say, it's a pool of money.
Right.
Rashi points out, the Gemara Nazir makes this point, Rashi gets it from the Gemara Nazir, this is Halach LaMoshe MiSinai. Just simply is. Right? Not that we necessarily understand it, but you have the right to look at this money as just simply pooled carbon money, and therefore what you can do now is take this money and put it in the pushka. I say the pushka, I mean that there are what the Mishnah and Shkalim called shofros, right? I know that sounds like the thing that we use in Rosh Hashanah, but in the context of the Beis HaMikdash, there are 13 pushkas in the Beis HaMikdash. Of those, 7 are what's called nedava, which means that you put the monies in these pushka, and then during the slow season, the Beis HaMikdash, they use these monies to buy olas nedava. So the money left by dad when he could not conclude his nazirus, and so it's going to simply be put into the pushka. However, maos mefurashim, but if the money already was specified by dad, which money is going to go to an ola, which to a chatas, which to a shlamim, so demei chatas yochulam amelach. So as far as the chatas is concerned, you can't do it. This is now, we're back to the first mission of the parak. Classic chatas shemesu ba'alaha. Here it's not chatas, here it's maos chatas. Same difference. Same story. So therefore the money has to be destroyed, throw it into the Yam HaMelech, v'lo nenin v'lo ma'olin. Now you can't benefit from the money, but at the same time there's no penalty if you are mol from the money because the money is no longer kachay Hashem. Demei ola, yaviu ola ma'olin b'hem. Now as far as the money for the ola, you can bring an ola. Right? Even though dad died, but nevertheless, so an ola, anyone can bring an ola. So the money that dad set aside for the carbon ola, so you could pick up the money and you could use it for your ola. And demei shlamim, yavu shlamim. And the demei shlamim, you're going to bring shlamim. Now this is going to be an interesting shlamim, because the shlamim was originally earmarked as shlamim for a nazir. Now your normal rules of a shlamim is that you have 2 days to eat it with the night in between. However,
Is it only for yourself?
So, just 1 second. So, yaviu shlamim v'nechalim liyom echad. Now, this shlamim, you're only entitled to eat for 1 day. Why? Because it's nazir shlamim. Now, granted, the nazir, unfortunately, is no longer here, but still, the money set aside was designated specifically for nazir shlamim, so it still keeps the legislative rules of that nazir shlamim. You're not allowed to eat that shlamim that second day.
it's not a regular shlamim that you could.
Right. The ain to unim lechem, and also there is no lechem requirement. Why? Rashi points out the pasuk says v'nasven al kapei nazir, because the lechem requirement demands that you put the lechem onto the hands of the nazir. Unfortunately, he died, so therefore there's no longer kapei nazir, so therefore there's no longer lechem. So it's interesting. So in certain respects, it still has a remnant of the fact that it was a shlamim of a nazir in the amount of time that you're allowed to eat it, but on the other hand, it doesn't follow all the rules of the shlamim nazir. Now, Moscow.
Excuse me, when you say Muslim production, it means it says specifically, right? So these coins are for these are these. But if you just said, I have a month and month, $3 for this, $5 for that, I didn't say which coins.
Which coins? So it sounds like.
That would be a different case.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Now, here he can separate the money. Here he can separate the money.
Right. Right, but he talked about dollar amounts. Okay.
I'm not sure.
Okay, Maskev L'Reish Lakish V'Lema Nami HaMafish Ma'os L'Kinim Lo Nenim V'Lamol. Basically, Ben, the Gemara is going to ask you a question, meaning we could have given a number of examples, and the Gemara says, why don't we look at this example specifically? HaMafish Ma'os L'Kinim, that woman sets aside money for a pair of birds. Lo nenim v'lo ma'olim, and meshein ru'lavi lahavi tarin shelo higiyaz manan u'bnei yom shavaz manan. Now the Mishnah, in other words, the Mishnah was interested in teaching us a halacha of lo nenim v'lo ma'olim. We could assign this statement of the Mishnah to the case where money was set aside for a pair of birds. Why? Now this is going to sound a little strange, because it's ro'i lahavi tarin shelo higiyaz manan. And b'nei yona sh'avar zmanan. Now, here's what we know. You remember in Chulin, back in Chulin, we talked about this, I think second parak, first parak, beginning of Chulin. 22 is... Daf Chav Beis? That's still first parak. Right? I think.
Says it's Chulin
22 AD. Yeah. I think it's still first parak. First parak of Chulin was long. Okay, anyway. So when it comes to the birds, so there's an interesting halacha. First of all, only two birds are eligible to be brought as a karban, either your tur or your yonah. Okay, which one's which? I know one's a pigeon, the other one's a dove. Yonah's a dove. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay, let's say yes. Okay, so every time the Torah talks about the yonah, it says b'nei yonah. That's the only way the Torah describes the yonah, b'nei yonah. So that means that the doves have to be young. And whenever the Torah talks about Tor, it says simply Tor, and it doesn't say Ben Tor or Benet Tor, however you would say it. So that means that the Torah has to be old. Now, I'm not a bird guy. At all.
Fish
I know a little bit about. A little bit. But I'm not a bird guy. But anyway, the Gemara in Chulin tells us that there are ways of determining whether it's young or whether it's old, right? The yellowing of the feathers of the bird. Okay, there are ways of determining. And by the way, you remember that Mishnah in Chulin? I like this part of the Mishnah. There's an adolescent stage where where it's neither. It's not either young nor it's old. My friend Rabbi Dr. Goldberg said this very well. He says the Torah is not so excited about adolescence. So. It's not a tour, it's not a ben yonah, it's not of the above. So when it comes to a ben yonah, so it has to be young. When it comes to a tour, it has to be old. Okay, good. Can I buy a tour that's immature, that's too young, too physically young, and simply say, look, I'm gonna use this for my carbon, but I'll just wait. I'll wait until it gets older. So can I do that? And the answer is, interestingly enough, yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, sure. You could do that. So what the Gemara now wants to suggest is the following. Is that if a person set aside money for kinim, meaning for a pair of birds that he wants to bring, and he's obligating himself to bring, so there should not be an issur of me'ila. Now, why not? Because what you could do is that you can, with that money, purchase a tour that's physically immature. Which means that right now, Basher Husham, you can't bring it as a karban. And so therefore, technically speaking, it's not Kachay Hashem. I know that sounds a little bit strange, but you could do that. It's possible to put yourself in that position. And why didn't the Mishnah select such a scenario? I think the answer is obvious, but this is the Gemara's question. So Amar Rava, Amar Torah, B'maos, Domim, Havei Shlamim. Because Rava says, look, in the world of Nazir, you're doing everything correctly. You're doing everything as you're supposed to. Meaning, you're supposed to set aside money for your karbanos, and of that money that you set aside, you're supposed to purchase a shlamim. There is nothing inappropriate or wrong of what you're doing. You're following everything according to the strict letter of the law. But however, Amra Torah, Havei Torim Shlo Higiyaz Manam, right? But when it comes to the birds, and you set aside money for the birds, are you supposed to buy an immature bird? Of course not. You're supposed to purchase a bird that is right now currently appropriate for the Mizbeach. So why would the Mishnah be interesting in giving us a scenario? Although technically it's correct, but why would the Mishnah be interesting in giving us a scenario, which is not really the appropriate thing to do? Simple answer to the question. Okay. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Hadam b'tchila, Hakal b'tchila v'chamor b'sofo. Nisachim Chomer b'tchilasan v'kal b'sofan. Okay, our liquids. Liquids that we're going to be talking about now is the blood and the oil and wine that is poured down the top of the mizbeach. Now, blood is light in the beginning and stringent at the end. I'll explain. Nisachim are stringent in the beginning and light at the end. I'll continue to explain. Dam b'tchila in mo'alin. Now, dam from the very beginning, there's no me'ilah. I shech the carbon. Blood comes out of the neck of the carbon. Okay, is there an iser of me'ilah by that blood that's coming out? And the answer is no. Not by the blood that's coming out. The blood comes out, collected in a bowl. There is no iser of me'ilah. Now, obviously, should I be getting benefit from that blood? Obviously not. That blood is supposed to be sprinkled onto the mizbeach. But nevertheless, so right now, there's no din of me'ilah. There's no iser of me'ilah. Why not? The Gemara is going to give three different drushas in terms of why not. But let's just say now, no iser of me'ilah. Now, what happens is the blood is sprinkled onto the mizbeach. And whatever blood is remaining is poured onto the foundation of the mizbeach. And then what? Right, the blood just disappears? No. In other words, there are canals in the azara. The blood flows down the canal. And it exits, and it goes, and it ends up reservoiring to a place called Nachal Kidron, the Kidron Valley. Okay, geographically, I don't know, but for those people who know, it goes down to Nachal Kidron. Once it goes down to Nachal Kidron, there will be a din of Me'ilah. That's so counterintuitive. Right, one of the rules that we started off with and we keep repeating throughout Masechta Me'ilah is once the mitzvah has been performed, so then therefore it's not going to be an Esther of Me'ilah. So just conceptually, it's very hard. When I shech the animal and the blood comes out, originally there's no din of Me'ilah. And after I do the mitzvah, now there's an Esther of Me'ilah. What? That does it. If anything, it should be just the opposite.
Why can't we say that the water in Nachal Kidron is mevatel
the dam? You could say that as well. Rashi explains, so Rashi over here helps us understand what's going on over here. So Rashi writes like this, I'm reading the Rashi in the Mishnah, the first Rashi in the Mishnah, towards the bottom of the Amud. So Rashi writes, Midrabanan, Midrabanan. So Rashi says like this, even in Nachal Kidron, the blood is only subject to the penalty of Me'ilah on a Dirabanan level. Of course, because once the blood has been sprinkled onto the Mizbech, mitzvah has been done, finished. There's not going to be a din of Me'ilah Midaraisa on the blood. Okay, now, so why is there a din of Me'ilah Midarabanan after it's been sprinkled, but not before it's been sprinkled? So Rashi explains beautifully. Lefisha in Gozer Gzeres B'Mikdash, because we have a general rule that in the base of Mikdash there are no Gzeres. Now, you know there are exceptions to that rule. But right now, but that's a rule. So, to slap a rabbinic penalty, a rabbinic me'ila on the blood while it's in the Beis HaMikdash? No, because you're in the Beis HaMikdash. And there is no gzera in the Beis HaMikdash. I'm continuing reading Rashi. The din me'ila is only mid-darabanan. Good. So Rashi tells us that once it goes and leaves the temple, now it's subject to the penalty of Mi'ila, but only Mi'ila Midurabanan, not Mi'ila Minatara. Okay. That's the story with the blood. Now we go to the Nesachim. Now Nesachim, with every carbon, most every carbon, but with every carbon, you have libations. Right? A meaningless word to me, but that's what they call it. In other words, oil, wine, and flour are accessories to every carbon that's brought in the Beis HaMikdash. And now what happens to the oil and wine is that they're poured on the top of the Mizbeach. On the southwest corner of the Mizbeach, there are two holes, like drains. And what you do is you go up onto the Mizbeach and you pour. Now, one of the holes is designated for the water for the Chag of Sukkos, for the mitzvah of Nisach HaMayim, and the other hole is designated for the wine which is poured. Now, we're going to get to Midos, we're going to get to Tamid. I don't remember precisely when, but we're going to talk about what exactly happens when you pour it. Does it go down the drain, or does it go over the side of the Mizbeach and basically run over the side of the Mizbeach? I think as a later point in time. Furthermore, there's even further discussion of then what happens. In other words, okay, actually today we're going to talk about it. So let's hold off that discussion until later this morning. Nisachim. Betchila san mo'alan bahen. Now Nisachim. When I designate this wine as Nisachim for my carbon as Kedusha. Kedusha saguf. Going to go on the Mizbeach. It's Kodshei Hashem. Therefore it's subject to Me'ilah. But once I pour it down the Mizbeach, the mitzvah's been done, Mi'ilah is finished. Yardu l'shisen ein mo'alam behen. So once it goes down these shisen, these pipes of the Mizbeach, it's no longer subject to Mi'ilah. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on.
Does the Nesachim have to be in Klisharet before it becomes...
I think so.
You just have the bottle in your hand.
No, I think it needs to be transferred to Klisharet. I'm not absolutely sure about that. Tanu Rabbanan Mo'alan B'damim Divrei Rabbi Meir V'Rabbi Shimon V'Chachamim Omrim Ein Mo'alan. Now, the Braisa records that there's a din of Me'ilah by the blood according to Rabbi Meir and according to Rabbi Shimon. Okay, there are issues over here, like often throughout Masechet Me'ilah, because our Mishnah, when presented to us, says Rabbi Shimon Omer that there is no Isser of Me'ilah, and our Mishnah specifically points to Rabbi Shimon. And meanwhile, the Braisa says that you are Moel Bedamin, dear Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon. So I don't want to get too involved in this, meaning if you look back at the Mishnah, you'll notice that there's another Gerson in the Mishnah, and our Mishnah may not be Rabbi Shimon, but rather it's Rabbi Shmuel, so then there's no issue whatsoever. It could be that the Braisa is talking about after it goes down to Nachal Kidron, and it's speaking only Midrabanan. That's another possible way to respond. Okay, I understand. There is a little bit of complication over here. We move on. In other words, so now we're going to darshan. Why is it that there's no me'ila of the blood of a carbon? So number one, the pasuk says, "Ani nasati lachem," and lachem means it's yours. It can't be yours, and there be a penalty of me'ila. The whole penalty of me'ila means it's not yours. And you used it. You misappropriated. So once the Torah specifies that the blood is yours, so that means that there is no Isser of Me'ilah. Another drasha is that the blood is lechaper. Its singular purpose is to provide kapara. So therefore, it is not to be distracted by anything else, not even the penalty of Me'ilah. Rav Yochanan amar krak adam hu benefesh yechaper. Lifnei kapara kal acher kapara. The Torah equates blood before kapara and blood after kapara. Malach kaparin ba meila flipne kaparin ba meila. Now, just like after kapar, there certainly is no meila. So to before kapar, there certainly is not going to be meila as well. Ve'ema, the Gemara says, can't you do the reverse of that? Malafne kapar yesh ba meila flachar acher kapar yesh ba meila. So the Gemara says that's not possible. V'chish yesh chadaver shenasus mitzvaso v'yesh ba meila. The Gemara says, look, it's a rule that you can't, the mitzvah cannot be done, and then there still be me'ilah. Meaning, once you finish the mitzvah, the penalty of me'ilah is lifted. So, we're going to go into a discussion that we've seen already a number of times throughout Shas. There are exceptions to this rule. So, number one, every morning you go up onto the mizbech, you take a shovel full of the ashes, you go walk down the mizbech, you deposit on the east side of the ramp, and that's what's called Trumas Hadeshen. And even though, check on the mitzvah, but those ashes are still subject to the penalty of Me'ilah. So, Mishum Dehava Le Trumas Hadeshen Ve'ivari Sir Mishalech Shneks V'man Ba'im Ke'echad. So if that were the only time that we find that there's Me'ilah, even post-mitzvah, so then I would say to you, good, binyanav, that creates a precedent. However, the Torah mentions it twice. Once by Trumas Hadeshen and once by the limbs of the Seir HaMishtalech. And we know, kol shnei ksuvim b'im kechei malamdim. And now that the Torah has to go over this two times, so those are now called no longer binyanav, but that's now called shnei ksuvim. Right, those are, right. Now that itself is subject to a debate whether or not you can or cannot benefit from the limbs of the seer HaMishalech after it was thrown off the cliff. And if you subscribe to the view that you can benefit from them, so all you're left now with is Trumas Hadeshen. Mishum Davli Trumas Hadeshen. Big Dekuna, Shneksuvim Baim Kech. V'chol Shneksuvim Baim Kech. And Malamdin. So the Gemara says, okay, Big Dekuna. Once the Big Dekuna are used, still subject to Me'ilah. Hanich L'Rabban Adar Mevi Nicham Sham Malam Hashem Tunin Geniza Shapir. El L'Rabbi Dosa Damar Mutali Shamish Koin Bain Koin Hedja Ma'ikal Meimar. By the way, I didn't make this clear. We're talking about the Begadim of the Koin Gadol. So according to one opinion, you're correct. Once the Kohen Gadol uses the Begadim of Yom Kippur, so then, Geniza. Which means it's still subject to the penalty of Me'ilah. However, if you are Rebbe Dosa who says that it can be reused and recycled by the Kohen Hedyot, so now what? So now we're in a situation in which you only have one Pasuk. So okay, so the Gemara says, I'll give you two. Two is Trumas Hadeshen, right, which has been our standard, our gold standard, and the other one is Egla Rufa. So there's one other variable that the Gemara takes into consideration, which the Gemara always takes into consideration, which is that there is an opinion that says that even if it's Shnei Ksuvim, you can learn from Shnei Ksuvim. Usually the Gemara doesn't identify who this opinion is. I remember somewhere in the banks of my memory that one time the Gemara actually identified which time it was. I don't remember. I don't remember who it was. But anyway, so the Gemara says it's based on the fact that each time the Torah introduces us to these particular mitzvahs, it uses it b'lashon miut. In other words, exclusionary language. It says ha'arufa, meaning here in this case by the Egla Rufa, even after I shechted, and even shechted, you know what I mean, hatchet it from the back of the neck, and even after it's dead, it's subject to Me'ilah, but that's the language of Ha'arufa. This animal is subject to Me'ilah, but most aren't, but any other time you do the mitzvah, it's not. And the same thing is true regarding the Trumas Hadeshen. V'samo, and you place it, Eitzel HaMizbeach. Hani and Midach Rinolo. Meaning this is subject to Me'ilah even after the mitzvah is done, but not by others as well. Okay. Right. How do you explain that position that you do learn from two different places? I don't know. The Gemara always throws it in as kind of like a, you know, what about him? Meaning it's not the, it seems, the flavor I get from the Gemara is that he's not the accepted position. It's out there, but it's not an accepted position. So now a little Nesachim talk to finish off our morning. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok Omer, Lu katan haya bein kevesh lemizbeach. There was a small little hole, cellar, if you will, between the ramp and the mizbeach. And b'ma'arava shokevish, it's on the west side of the ramp. Achas l'shiv m'shana, now once every 70 years. Pirche kohuna yordin bo. Young kohanim. I think young only so that they could fit over there. Right? I was walking with my daughter to the park, and I forgot the key, so what my daughter did is she just she just stuck her hand right through the fence, and she opened up the door. Okay, so yardin bo umevian yain karishu domela igule devela, and so now if you have wine over there now, it's been sitting there for 70 years. Okay, apparently it kept well over there. I hard to imagine. Phil, you know a little more about wine than I do. not an open cellar. Okay. Anyway, it looks like cakes. Right, it's congealed wine now. It looks like pressed figs. The Gemara makes that a comparison. V'sorfen osa b'kedusha. Now what do you have to do? You have to burn it. Meaning, it's nesachim. And it's still, in other words, there's still more to the story. And so once every 70 years, talking about an exciting event, we're now going to burn. But we have to burn it in Kodesh, meaning in the Azara. Shenemar b'kodesh asech nesach shechal Hashem. You pour it b'kodesh. You pour it in Kodesh. Kodesh over here means in the Azara. So k'shem shenisucha b'kdusha, kach treifasa b'kdusha. So just like the nisuch, the actual pouring itself, is done b'kdusha in the Azara, so to the burning has to be done b'kdusha. Now my mashma, now the Gemara says, how did you get there? The Amar Avina Asya Kodesh Kodesh. We learn through Gzeir Shavat Tzivhacha Bakodesh Vekzivhasim Veserafta Sanosa Baeish Velo Yachol Ki Kodeshim Ma Nosa Sreifasa Bekdusha Av Hai Nami Bekdusha. Now Nosa needs to be burnt. Where does the Nosa get burnt? In the Azara, in Kodesh. Here too, where does the congealed wine of 70 years get burnt? In the Azara. So now, point is as follows. Point is very straightforward. According to Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzadok, it comes out now that even after you pour the Nesachim down the Mizbeach, story's not over. Mitzvah's not yet done. And the mitzvah's not going to be concluded until perhaps as much as 70 years later, 70 years from now, we're going to burn it in the Azara. So according to Rabbi Lazar, and according to Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzadok, that now means that there should still be a penalty of Me'ilah even after I pour the Nesachim. And our Mishnah says that after you pour the Nesachim, there's no Me'ilah. So it's not a stretch to say that our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzadok. So I feel the same, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzadok, di'i kalat. So the Gemara's answer is, well, what you could suggest is as follows. Our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Elazar Bar Tzadok, in a scenario where you caught it before it went down. Now, I'm not really sure 100% how to understand this, meaning that if it touches the ground, it's got to stay. Because you're now subject to that mitzvah of burning it. But if you're able to stop in the middle, so then the mitzvah's been done. Even according to Rabbi Lazar Bar Tzadok, is he condoning? Is he saying that you should do that? I don't think so.
The fact that this was the actual practice doesn't give it more weight. That he's giving proof that this is the way it was done. So maybe it should be more powerful than the Mishnah because he's giving you evidence.
Okay, I mean he's telling you this is what happened. I understand, and it's hard to understand how you can have a debate about what happened. Meaning the Chachamim were disagreeing with this?
That's what I'm saying. Like usually in the past you've said that if you could show that something, this was actually done,
right,
that's got more weight to
right
it than the emission.
Fine. I'm with you. I don't fully understand this. But okay, anyway, the point is that if it didn't hit the floor, so then according to Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzadok, there is no Me'ilah. There only will be a Me'ilah if it hits the floor. And again, just I understand it's difficult. Meaning, before you pour it, subject to Me'ilah. Immediately after you pour it, the Me'ilah is gone. Once it hit the floor, we're back to an Isser of Me'ilah. It's just strange. I'm not processing it well, but okay, that's the way the Gemara sounds like. Iga de Ami, now what we're going to do is, these next two lines of Gemara, is just review this information, but slightly different format. Iga de Ami. Lema mas nisen, kerebelaz rabbi tzadok, di'ikalat. Meaning, what we're going to do is that just this format is going to be, assuming you were collate, can we not suggest now that our Mishnah is even going like Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok? So Amre lo. So they said no. Umi de Rabbanu. And it's and our Mishnah is only speaking about a din de Rabbanan, kra kanasiv la asma, I'm sorry, kra kanasiv la, but he brought a pasuk asmachta. The pasuk was only an asmachta. But that's not, but it's not a real din daraisa. Okay, good.
What happened?
In that ikadamri, I'm also not sure what happened. Okay,
the Mishnah stands or doesn't?
No, the Mishnah is good. Okay, so let's quickly go over. So we started off now the third parak of Mila today. We started off with the Or Chatas Amesa. Once the designate as a Mesa, it's no longer Kachay Hashem, no longer subject to Mila. We talked about the money of a Nazir. The money of a Nazir, when it's Sussum, when it's unspecified money, I should not benefit from the money, but if I do, I'm also not subject to Me'ilah. Since any of those monies can be used for Shlamim, I read Rashi, made a suggestion in terms of what Rashi's opinion is on this matter. Okay, and then the last part of today's daf, we talked about blood versus Nesachim. Blood, there is no Me'ilah of blood before Kapar, even after Kapar, there's no Me'ilah of blood. Three drushas to make that point, that there's no Me'ilah of blood. Once it flows down to Nachla Kidron, Midrabanan, there's going to be a din of Me'ilah. Why not in the base of Mikdash? Because then goes in Gzera B'Mikdash. And finally, Nesachim. So, by Nesachim, there is an opinion of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, who says that there's going to be a din of Me'ilah, even after it goes down into the ground. But our Mishnah does not go like Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok, and our Mishnah is of the position that once you pour the Nesachim, the mitzvah has been performed, and therefore there's not going to be a din of Me'ilah.
How come we didn't apply this angle in the beginning of the Nesefta, when you're talking about the Rabbanan Me'ilah, all those cases where it was Shech,
right, well,
Lizels, that was all in the Beit
HaMikdash. Yeah,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
And there we're talking about Me'ilah Midrabanan,
yeah.
Right, according to one opinion, I remember. Okay, it's good. It's good.